It's good evening. Good to see everybody out on this Lord's Day again in this 6 o'clock service. Glad that you've come to be with us this evening. I guess if you were reading through the Bible and you were a student of the Bible, you would know that if there is one nation that is the subject matter of the Bible, it would be Israel. That would not be a hard question to ask. Everybody knows that Israel is the focus of the Scriptures. As a matter of fact, the story of, as we'll see, begins in Exodus, and it doesn't end until Revelation, really, as it's put together. I saw a sticker today on an automobile. We were going down the road, and it said, "Stand with Israel." It's a pre-millennial idea that people have that the Jews are still the chosen people of God, and that the Lord's going to come back and reign for 1,000 years. That's kind of a different set. Would you like to hear that sermon? Do you remember the first time I ever came here? That's what y'all asked me to preach on. Back in 2000-something, y'all, it was a summer series, and you said you wanted me to preach on premillennialism. Are you serious? Why would you do that to me? Anybody. Anyway, now that I got that off my chest. Israel is the focus of this book. And the interesting question that we need to ask is why? Why are they the people? Now, there are two kinds of people in the world. There are Jews and Gentiles. And that's because of this creation of the nation of Israel. And that will always be true. And that was in the design of God from the very beginning. But what about this nation of Israel? Well, it really does begin in the book of Genesis. It doesn't begin to be formed, at least, until Exodus. But when Genesis chapter 12, God comes to Abram and he tells him that I'm going to make a promise to you. And we know it as the threefold promise that God makes to Abram, because Abram is 75 years old. He is living in the Ur of Chaldees. His father Haran is living there with him. They leave there, go up to actually Haran, and his father dies there. But God makes this promise to Abram, and he says, I want you to get out of your country. I want you to leave your family, your father's house, and I want you to go to a land that I will show you. And he says in verse 2, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. So that's kind of neat that God comes to this man, righteous man. Is told to leave and go, and I'm going to give you a nation, I'm going to give you a land, and that through you, you're going to have a seed. Now that, the land thing, well, okay, the nation, he's 75 years old. His wife is 65, which is not old, by the way. And they don't have children, but they're going to have a child. And so this is where the beginning of Israel really is declared in Scripture when God says that I'm going to make of you a great nation. That's this nation of Israel. And then later, in the book of Exodus, in the 19th chapter, and these are all in your pew Bible, the numbers that are there, page 82, they're in your pew Bible, so you can follow along with us. A lot of things have happened since Abraham, of course, and the promise, he did have a son at the age of 100. She was 90, and then, of course, he had a son, and then that son had some sons, and they went to Egypt. So now the Hebrews have been brought out of Egypt, and they're at Mount Sinai, which we know, of course, is where the law is given. But in order to be a nation, you have to have a law. Well, they're just a bunch of people right now. There's about 2 million Hebrews that have escaped from Egypt, crossed the Red Sea, did that whole thing, and they've come to Mount Sinai. God is now going to make them a nation, and the way that he does that is he gives them this law. And in Exodus 19, he says that in the third month after the children of Israel, 3 months after they had come out of the land of Egypt, on the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. And they had departed from Rephidim, had come to the wilderness of Sinai, camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain, and Moses went up to God. And the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus," notice the language here, "thus you shall say to the house of Jacob." See, they're really not a nation yet. "But thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings, brought you to myself. Now, therefore, If you will indeed obey my voice, keep my covenant, then you shall be my special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And these are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. And so from that point on, God goes and gives them a law. And he gives them the Ten Commandments, and then he gives them everything else that, is entailed in the law. But that's what makes, we became a nation when we had our own law, and we established our own law. Later in the book of Deuteronomy, after they have finished their 40 years of wandering, Moses is reminding them of this, and he tells them in Deuteronomy chapter 5, he will actually recount the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are found in Exodus 20. They're also found in Deuteronomy chapter 5. But notice in Deuteronomy chapter 5 that Moses says the context of this law is given to you. Moses called all Israel and said to them, they've been a nation for about 40 years now, "Hear, O Israel, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your hearing today, that you may learn them and be careful to observe them." Here it is in verse 2. "The Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb." Covenant's the law. That's what made him a nation. "The Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, those who are here today, all of us who are alive." So he says, God made a covenant with us. He didn't make it with anybody else. The thing about the law of Moses in its entirety, it wasn't given to anybody but those people, to the Jews, to the Hebrews. It wasn't given to the Chinese. It wasn't given to the Indians. It wasn't given to the folks that live wherever they live. It was only given to just those people that were of the Hebrews and of the sons of Judah. And so he says it's only there. And so God has now fulfilled the promise. Number one, to Abraham, I'm going to give you a nation. So he gave him Israel. But they don't have the land yet. Well, that comes next in the book of Joshua. Because now in Joshua 21, Israel, to be a nation, you got a law, but you don't have a place to live. Now you got a place to live. They crossed the Jordan River. In about 7 years, they conquered the land of Canaan under the leadership of Joshua. And so in Joshua chapter 21, Joshua tells them that, okay, here we are. And we have completed all of what God has given us to do. And it's important to see the language of what Joshua says here in verse 43 when he says, "So the Lord gave to Israel all the land of which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it and dwelt in it. And the Lord gave them rest all around according to all he had sworn to their fathers. And not a man of all their enemies stood against them. And the Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand." Verse 45, "Not a word failed of any good thing which the Lord had spoken to the house of Israel, all that came to pass." So there it is. You got law, and now you have a land. And the land really was from the Euphrates to the Wadi El Arish, which was called the River of Egypt. We're not talking about the Nile. There is a little Wadi River down in south of Gaza, and that's where the extent of the land of Canaan was. But they're a nation. And from that point on, of course, they become the United Nation. They live under the judges for about 300 years. And then they say, we don't like that anymore. We want a king. So they got a king. His name was Saul. That didn't work out too well either. But 40 years later, they got a new king named David. He did okay. 40 years later, they had Solomon. And then when Solomon died in 931, there was a civil war. And there were 10 tribes that went north and worshiped Baal. And those 10 tribes, the kings were evil, every single one of them. They lasted about 209 years. And then God just destroyed them, annihilated them. They just were wiped off the face of the earth. The Assyrians came in, took them out. And during the same time in 931, those two southern tribes, Judah and Benjamin, retained devotion to God. And for the most part, had good kings. They lasted longer, of course, than the northern tribes. They lasted for 325 years. Babylonians came under Nebuchadnezzar, took them off into captivity. And because of their disobedience, God said, you're going to be in captivity for 70 years. They were in captivity for 70 years. And then when you read the book of Ezra, Ezra talks about King Cyrus came along and said, hey, send the people home 70 years later. And so he does. And from that point on, Israel as a nation is ruled by the Persians first, Darius and all of that group, and then the Greeks under Alexander the Great defeated the Persians, and the nation of Israel was subjected to, subjugated, I guess both, to the Greeks. And then when the Romans came along and took care of the Greeks, by the time you come to Jesus, the nation of Israel really is not a singular nation. It is a nation that is governed by the Romans. Jesus actually was born during the reign of Caesar Augustus, and he died in the reign of Tiberius Julius Caesar. And so when you read the New Testament, the nation of Israel is there. They're just subjugated to the law of Rome. And then when you come to 70 A.D., they kind of had all they wanted out of Israel, and so they sent General Titus, who would become the next Caesar, actually, to go and to take care of the Jews. And General Titus came to Jerusalem, besieged it for about 11 months, and then he just destroyed it. As a matter of fact, he razed it. And I don't mean that way. I mean, he razed it. But they said that it was like you took a plow and just leveled it. 70 A.D. was pretty much the end of the Jewish nation. It did not effectively have any authority of anything. It was pretty much gone. There was still another 70 years after that that there was a little small skirmishes. The Jews tried to rekindle themselves, but they were effectively defeated in 70 A.D. God had promised that was going to happen. About 140 A.D., they kind of did another thing, and the Romans just came along. And since then, the nation of Israel has never returned to where it was before. And I know you're saying, now wait a minute, 50,000 miles that way is the nation of Israel. Well, there is. But that nation of Israel is nothing that you will find in the Bible, simply because they do not keep the law of Moses, they don't have a temple, and you can't do animal sacrifices because the Israeli Petah group will not let you do that. It's just a joke. And they don't follow anything biblical. So there is a nation of Israel, but it is not the biblical nation of Israel. But that was pretty much, that's all there is to the nation of Israel. But back to our original question. Where would the story of the Bible be without Israel? I mean, what would we do without the story of Israel and who they were? It's important to know why God did this. In Galatians chapter 3 and verse 19, I think one of the most important scriptures, and you have to be careful when you're a preacher and you say that because you're thinking, what does that say for everything else? It's just a verse that really highlights something that we have to understand. We wonder sometimes, why do we have the law of Moses? Why did God take these people off to the side and say, okay, you're my chosen people. What about everybody else? It's not that God rejected everybody. It's not that God decided that he wasn't going to allow anybody else to have salvation. And why did he do that? Well, actually, Paul answers that question in Galatians chapter 3 and verse 19, a very fascinating passage, because they asked the same question back then. They said, what purpose then does the law serve? You ever wondered that? You ever kind of, why do we have the law of Moses? Well, it was added because of transgressions till the seed should come to whom the promise was made, and it was appointed through angels by the hand of a mediator. Let me kind of generalize that for a moment. And this is a very generalization of a generalization. What God did is that he protected the seed promise. When Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, God said that I'm going to bring a seed, and he did. That was going to be Jesus Christ. When the world went south during the days of Noah, God started all over again. And that what he says in Galatians 3:19 was that the reason that the law was given was to protect the seed promise. Because if there was not a protective agency, and I'm using very generic terms here, if there was not a protective agency over that seed, we would have a rerun of Noah. We'd have Noah part two. And God already said, I'm not going to destroy the world by water. And so what he did is that he established the law of Moses and the children of Israel, because that's where the seed promise comes through. It didn't come through the Gentiles. You can look at the genealogy of Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew. You can look in Luke chapter 3.
And you will see that the genealogy of Jesus comes right through the lineage of Israel and the nation. And so what the nation of Israel functioned as is basically a protectorate of the seed promise that he had promised. And not only that, but also, as we have so often done, and really we're doing tonight, Israel is a great example about what not to do. You know, you're always looking for good examples. Israel is an example about things that we ought not to be doing. And the thing that I hope that you'll get out of the story of Israel is that, guess what? That's us in a way, because we look at Israel and think, how could they do those things? Well, we do the same thing. They didn't have belief like they should have. Well, neither do we. And so what happens is that Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 6 that these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after every evil things as they also lusted. I mean, the purpose of an example is that you don't do those things. If you see it happening over here, know that if God did it to them, they're going to do it to you. And so we read the story of the nation of Israel and we see how that God worked with them. And when God was blessing them, it's because they were obedient. Guess what? If we obey God, he'll bless us. But when Israel was frequently disobedient to God, God punished them. Well, guess what he's going to do to you and me, or you and I? He's going to punish us. So Paul says that Israel is an example. Down in verse 11, now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition. And it was written so that we can know this is the character of God. So you wonder about the nation of Israel. It's because they become a template for you and I to say, wow, that's how God does things. And they are an example. But again, the question, why them? Well, actually, that is answered. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 7. We're going to spend a little bit of time here back in the Old Testament, the book of Deuteronomy. The setting of the book of Deuteronomy again is that the children of Israel have finished their 40-year wandering. Moses is about 120 years old. He is not going to be allowed to go into the land because he got mad at, you know, the whole water thing. And so he's writing the book of Deuteronomy as sort of a recalling everything that's happened. And so this is a historical account of where they have come in the last 40 years. It is also serving to warn them that when you get ready to cross the Jordan River, you better do what God says to do. And so in the book of Deuteronomy, what he does is he begins by, exhorting them that they need to be the kind of people that they need to be faithful to him. But he begins with a clarification that they need to understand about why God even chose them. Because maybe they wondered about that. I don't know. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, he warns them, do not intermingle with those people over there. Don't marry them. Don't let your sons do. He warns them about that. But then he goes down in verse 6, and this is what he says. You are a holy people to the Lord your God. And the Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure above all the peoples on the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love on you, nor choose you, because you were more in number than any other people. For you are the least of all peoples. But because the Lord loves you, and because he would keep the oath which he swore to your fathers, and the Lord has brought you out of with a mighty hand, redeemed you from the house of bondage, and from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Therefore, know that the Lord your God, he is God, the faithful God, who keeps covenant and mercy for 1,000 generations with those who love him and keep his commandments. And he repays those who hate him to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack with him who hates him. He will repay him to his face. Therefore, you shall keep the commandment, the statutes, and the judgments which I command you today to observe them. Have you ever had somebody come along and say, I've got good news and bad news? And you're thinking, oh, wow, this ought to be good. Well, this is God coming to Israel and really saying that I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. Because what he's telling them is that this is why I chose you. And it's probably not what you think it is. One of the problems that Israel really always had, especially by the time Jesus came along, Israel thought, hey, we are the special chosen people of God. I mean, they were so full of themselves. They were so full of pride. They hated the Samaritans. You know, the whole thing about the Samaritans were hated so much by the Jews. This is true. They would not walk on Samaritan soil. I don't know how they figured out where the line was, but if you were a good Jew, you wouldn't even put your feet on Samaritan soil. That's how much they hated these people. But it was not necessarily hate, it was arrogance. Because they thought, we're the children of Abraham. You remember Jesus telling, or rather John the Baptist telling the religious leaders, you think you're something? It ain't nothing. God can make a nation out of stones. I should have put that in here. I mean, that's kind of like humbling, isn't it? God can make stones. But they had become so arrogant. But what Moses is telling them is that you are a special people. Yes, you're God's people. God chose you. And he says there in verse 6, yes, you are a holy people. You belong to God. And as a matter of fact, he goes on to say, above all the people on the face of this earth. I mean, that's kind of special. To think that you are being told by the God Creator, you are special above everybody on the face of this earth. I mean, that'll make you feel good. You got to be careful about pride. But the Lord chose them to be his own special treasure. Leave your marker there at Deuteronomy chapter 7 and just run over a few pages to chapter 26. And he kind of builds upon this, and he says in verse 16, this day, this is chapter 26, verse 16, this day the Lord your God commands you to observe these statutes and judgments, therefore you should be careful to observe them with all your heart and with all your soul. Today you have proclaimed the Lord to be your God, and that you will walk in his ways and keep his statutes, commandments, and judgments, and that you will obey his voice. Okay, verse 18. Also today, the Lord has proclaimed you to be his special people, just as he promised you that you should keep all of his commandments, and that he will set you high above all nations which he has made, in praise, in name, in honor, and that you may be a holy people to the Lord your God, just as he has spoken. God is going to make you the biggest things on the face of this earth. You're going to be more powerful. You're going to be having everything. You're going to be for the praise and the honor. You're going to be the greatest nation that has ever walked upon the face of this earth. I mean, who wouldn't want that? And so that's what he's telling them, is that you have, God chose them as his own special possession. I mean, that's just kind of cool, because God is just saying, you're my people. They're a special treasure to God above all the people. Now let's go back to our text, back in Deuteronomy chapter 7. Because he tells them that they're going to be these holy people. Why did he choose them? Well, it wasn't because there was a lot of them. We're going to choose these people because there's like 50 million of them. No, he tells them, I always kind of look for humor in the Bible. This is sort of, you know, funny. That he didn't choose them because they were more in number than any other people. I don't know. Did they think that they were just outnumbered people? I mean, they were not even a large nation. They were not even considered a large nation. When the Hebrews came out of Egypt, they had about 603,000 fighting men. You got to add the women and the children and however you want to, you know, do that. That's in Numbers 2. Oh, I have to make a confession. Do I have time? You know, on Wednesday night we're talking about doing a survey of the Bible, and that if you want to know something about the Bible, you ought to go. If you want to know something about Kings. You know, the other day I was trying to remember what the number was of 603,550 people. And I kept looking and trying to find it. And you know where I found it? In the book of Numbers. So apparently I don't do what I ask you to do, because I'm thinking, when I found it, I thought, boy, I should have gone to the book of Numbers and it would have told me. Okay, never mind. 600, that's not a lot of people. Blake, how many people are in Hernando County? Wow, he's good. That's really true. There's 4.5 million people in Hillsborough County. Do you realize that there's more people, or maybe about the size of Hillsborough County, in this nation? God is saying, you're not even a big part. You're not even a lot of people here. There's not numerical strength. Nobody even took notice of Israel. They're that little, you know, dinky thing over there. And God is saying, I didn't choose you because you were the most numerous in the world. They were like the dust on the world stage. You weren't even that many. He didn't set his love on you because you were the biggest one. He said, as a matter of fact, you were the least of all the people. Verse 8. God said, I chose you because I loved you. That is the reason God chose them. The basis of God's relationship with Israel began with love. And that's it. God loved Israel and chose them because of his love. It was a covenant of love. He loved them because he would love them. A simple, foolish reason in the opinion of men. We love when there is something lovable in the person loved. Our love depends upon excitement without. God's love is free, sovereign, and in spite of everything unworthy. Because you and I both know, even with these Hebrews, they did not deserve his love. And yet he says, but the reason that he chose them in verse 8 is because the Lord loves you. That's why I chose you. And you want to say, well, what? No, it's because I love you. That's why. And he loved them because he made a promise. He told Abram, I'm going to give you a nation. He told Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I'm going to give you a nation. It is going to come through. God is a God of promise keeping. And God said, I love them, and I made a promise, and I'm not going to come back from that promise. Now, there was a couple of times, you remember, that God wanted to wipe them off the face of the earth. When they was at Mount Sinai, God was going to come down and just, and Moses said, you really can't do that. But God loved them, and he kept his promise. He kept his promise to a 75-year-old man who couldn't have a child. He kept his promise to all of those people. He kept the promise to the grandson who had his name changed. He just kept his promise all the way through those years. God kept his promise, and he said, you're going to be my people, and you're going to be my nation. So, because the Lord loves you, and because he would keep the oath which he swore to your fathers, because God kept them, because he's the one that brought them out. He reminds them that I am the one that showed you my mighty power. Okay, and I got to stay over here. Now, if I ask you, what is the first commandment in the law of Moses, in the Ten Commandments, I mean? I think I've got you taught what the answer is. It is not, thou shalt have no other gods before me. That is not the first of the Ten Commandments. The first of the Ten Commandments is this. I am the Lord your God who brought you up out of Egypt. You will not have any other idols or gods before me. That, you see, that first part's important. I'm the one that brought you out here. I am the one that did this. I am the one who brought you up out of Egypt. I'm the one that brought you out of the house of bondage. And the reason that you're special is because I loved you and I kept a promise, and I'm the one who brought you. Don't you be talking about what you did. You didn't bring yourself out of Egypt. No, I did that. And he wanted them to remember that. Israel never could brag about what they did to get out of Egypt. No. And God said in verse 9, that you're there to do my will. Understand, therefore, that the Lord your God is indeed God. He is the faithful God who keeps his covenant for 1,000 generations and lavishes his unfailing love on those who love him and obey him. God expected them to obey him. And the blessings of God come to those who love him and keep his commandments. Because he is telling them, I chose you because I want you to keep my will. And I want you to be faithful to my will. And I want you to know that I will bless you when you obey me, because you're my special people. And nothing's going to change that. And the final thing is that God said, listen, and they knew this because they had experienced it. If you disobey me, I'll punish you. You made me my special child, but I'm going to still spank you. I won't say this in public because it'll get back to my other three, but there's one child we had to spank once or twice, I think, but they think that we didn't do it because she was special. But I'll tell you, when we were spanking any of our children, it's because we loved them, and it's because they disobeyed us. But they were, you know, we loved them. And God says, if you disobey me, you may be special, but I'm going to punish you. And he did. And then in verse 11, they must keep his commandments and his statutes. And so that's why God chose them. Why do we have Israel? Because that's why God chose them. There are five things found in the story that God says about them. I brought them, I required them, I chose them, I loved them, and I commanded them. That's why Israel is who they are. And that's why we read about them. Of course, we also read about how they failed. Well, if you're really kind of paying attention to what's going on here, that sounds a whole lot like something else. That sounds a lot like you and me. Have you ever wondered why God saved you? Why God chose you, chose me? Do you ever wonder, you know, maybe even ask God, why me? Because salvation in Christ is found in the story of Israel. Because the Lord brings us to salvation. The Lord requires us to obey his will. The Lord chose us in him before the foundation of the world. The Lord loved us before we loved him. The Lord commands us to follow the law, just like what he said in Deuteronomy chapter 7. Because what God is doing to us is he is saying, I've chosen you. I have redeemed you. I have brought you out away from the wrath of God. In John 3 and verse 36, everybody wants to focus on John 3:16. Well, that's a great passage, and it's a pretty important passage. But I tell you, when you get on down into the chapter about verse 36, it really opens up when he says that he who believes in the Son has everlasting life, and he who does not believe the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abides in him. God brought us out of that wrath. God got us out of that situation. And in Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 4, what it tells us is that you and I have been chosen. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in heavenly places. Why has he done this? Because what God has done is that he has saved me. He has chosen me in Christ before the foundation of the world, that I would be holy and without blame before him in love. Before the world began, God established a pattern that I can be a part of. Why? Because he wanted to save me. He wanted to redeem me from the wrath. He wanted to choose me in him. And I have been saved by the power of God. Later in Ephesians 2 and in verse 8, for by grace you have been saved through faith. It's not of ourselves. It's the gift of God, not of works, lest anyone. Do you have any reason? Do I have any reason to say, yeah, I'll save myself? No, we don't. We're like Israel. We couldn't have gotten out of bondage, but God delivered us from his wrath. And we have been made a holy people. Think about this. Peter tells us that we are the spiritual Israel. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. Notice what we are in the blessing about being a child of God. I am the chosen generation. I'm a royal priesthood. I'm a holy nation. I am his own special people, that I would proclaim the praises of him who called me out of darkness into his everlasting light. I am part of the greatest kingdom that has ever been in the world since the time began, even greater than Israel. Because I'm a holy nation, I'm a chosen people, and I've done all those things. And you know why? Because I loved him so much. No. And it's not because you loved him anymore either. Because John tells us in 1 John chapter 4, do you know why God chose me as his own special people? And this is love, not that we loved God, that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. I don't deserve it, and neither do you. God loved me first. That's where it starts. God chose me. God allowed me to be saved. God brought his grace because that's the way God's love is. And he goes on to say in 1 John chapter 5 that we are commanded to obey, the next chapter, when he says that this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. People say, well, God is not a commandment keeper. Yes, he is. He wants us to command. He wants us to keep his commandments. Why? Because he wants us to show that we love him. We are saved and became the people of God just like Israel. We have nothing to brag about. We have nothing to boast about. We are chosen by God not because we're the most populous people in this world, not because we deserve it, and not that we can say that I brought myself out of this. No. I am a child of God by God's grace. The challenge is found in what happened to Israel, and therein is our lesson about the example of Israel in Hebrews chapter 3. Today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the day, or as in the rebellion in the day of trial in the wilderness. Well, your fathers tested me and tried me and saw my works 40 years. Therefore, I was angry with that generation and said, they always go astray in their heart, and they have not known my ways. And so I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. And then he goes on to say, beware, brethren, lest there be any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. Verse 13. But exhort one another daily, which while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Why Israel? Well, God gave Israel as an example of his love, of his grace, of his mercy, and his wrath. Romans 11:22 says, behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God. On them which fell severity, but toward thee goodness, if you continue in his goodness. You know what? That's Israel. When they obeyed him, he blessed them. When they disobeyed him, he punished them. That's you and me. We've been saved by the grace of God that has given us the allowance to be obedient to him, to have that new resurrection that we talked about this morning. And so the admonition of Hebrews is exhort one another daily. We're the spiritual Israel. Let's live like the people of God. Let's be that holy nation. Let's be that holy priesthood. Let Jesus have his way in my life. Let people know I'm a citizen of the kingdom. I'm a soldier of the cross. I'm a child of God. Let them know that. Because God made us to be his glory. Think on these things. Let's stand as we sing.